Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He was there. I'm not saying, like, he's only been there a year. We'll give him some time. 650 says, I used to work restaurant management. We ordered extra name badges for every employee and kept them in the office. So if they forgot it one day, they could use the back one. And then regardless of their name, they all said Jesus.
Why?
I remember one time.
That took somebody a good 45 seconds to tap out in their phone. Think it
and
was
it
worth
was,
it?
It was two techs.
Think they regret it?
I don't know if they regret it or not. But the whole thing about, you know, just, I know we got off on a little bit of a tangent there. When we were talking to Scott about week zero, and he said, give me two games to whet my appetite. I agree with him. But I thought the good game would be the rival game down in Florida.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Well, the really good game was Arizona-Hawaii.
Right.
And you think about Khalil Tate, who's one of the most exciting players in the country. And
did Hawaii hang on?
Yeah.
That game? Okay.
45-38. Did you see how it ended?
I did not. I just knew that Hawaii jumped out.
I had a text from Tyler earlier. It's hilarious. He says it's the first ever running Hail Mary because he was on his own 40, Khalil Tate. The time was running out, and he just took off, and he ran all the way to the one. It was like that Mike Jones tackling Dyson.
He stopped at the one?
Remember Mike Jones tackled Dyson? That was Rams over not Titans. Who was Jake DeLong? Panthers?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it was a very exciting game, but how about that? Arizona, you're already done.
Jeez. One yard.
Well, they might go to a Sun Bowl.
1 yard shy.
1 yard. Bear down. Never did tell me.
That Super Bowl that you're talking about, that was more than 1 yard. And I hear it still. People say, yeah, well, they missed winning the Super Bowl by like a half yard. It was more like 2.5 yards.
I was going to say one.
No.
It was 2.5?
I'm going to look it up.
Do you remember Dan Buns in Super Bowl 16?
Yeah, he had a big
Cedric Hardman.
The Superdome, right?
Every single tackle. No, it was in Pontiac, Michigan.
That was the goal line stand?
Yeah.
That's right, Pontiac.
The Silver Dome.
Mm-hmm.
It's now imploded, I believe.
Terrible.
It's funny, you had the Super Bowl in Detroit, and everyone's like, it'd be the first, you know, Super Bowl or first NFL championship since the Ice Bowl. And it's like, no, it's indoors. But I remember talking to these Niner fans. They're like, they're always in L.A. or Miami or New Orleans, and we got to go to Detroit.
Right.
I'm like, just be happy you're going.
Right.
Just get it in. 510 says there's more than 4 miles of tubing.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't see that there's
Do you know who we should ask about that?
Who?
Colin Powell.
Hey, now, that's funny. I see what you did. You can't teach what Rick Tittle does.
510 says there are 60,000 miles of tubing in the average human body.
Okay.
No, wrong.
60,000 miles?
Even if you count capillaries and veins and everything else, there's no way.
Stop it. I was having a hard time believing 4 miles, and he adds 59,600 to it.
These are the things they tell you as a kid, two things that are very contradictory. One is human beings are electric, right? About the little synapses and pulses, it's electricity.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the other thing is we're made out of 85%
water.
So if we're water and we're electric, that's a...
Did you hear about the lightning strike at the PGA Tour event?
No.
Huge lightning strike, and it hurt six people, sent six people to the hospital. These people didn't get struck by the lightning itself. The lightning, and it was a serious strike. I think there's video of it. It hit a tree by which these fans were standing, and it just basically blew the tree up, and the bark was blown off it, and the bark is what ended up putting these people in the hospital. I've never heard of anything like that. That sounds scary, man.
So that tree's bark was louder than its bite.
Oh, I see what you
You know what's funny
too.
Is that there were some Andrew Luck haters, and somebody put together, I saw online, some like six Jacoby Brissett tweets that all sounded dumb. And it's like, here's our new quarterback. And one of them was, you know, they say lightning doesn't strike twice in the same spot. How do they know? Because how does lightning know where it's been?
Mm.
That to me doesn't sound dumb. That to me,
deep.
It's just a little bit deep.
Last fact. If you were to spread out the surface area of the lungs, it would cover a tennis court.
I think I played on that court one time. On 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Urban and Tittle.
Die besten Le Grande say keep the champion.
I gotta say it didn't really go well for me this morning, Herbs. My team Tottenham lost to
Spurs. Yes.
The Spurs is hoop. They lost to Newcastle wearing this Dutch orange kit. It was really humiliating, but that's the Prem. Any game they can just jump up and bite you.
So were you up like 2-3 in the morning watching this?
No, this game was at 8:30.
Okay. Are you one of those guys though when there is a huge match and it's on the other side of the world that you'll wake up in the middle of the night to watch it?
No.
No?
Well, if it's at 7. The 4:30 a.m. games?
You won't do it.
I tape them.
Okay.
Or what do you call it? MP4 it. All right. I guess that's one way of looking at it. Let's bring in our buddy Oscar Aparicio. He is with Better Rivals, the 49ers podcast. He breaks down a lot of 49er football through film, through advanced stats. Oscar, thanks for being on the show again. And I was saying all last week and yesterday and also Friday, I guess that counts as last week, that I'm not one iota concerned about Jimmy G and the 5 interceptions in practice because he's making throws he probably wouldn't make and he's learning new receivers and there's nothing to worry about. And I don't know, there's a lot of alarm bells ringing and then the absurd when people said maybe Mullins will start. It was kind of a joke, but I guess for those people who were panicked, they feel a little bit better today, Oscar?
I would hope so, and I think that they should feel better because that performance was the exact performance that many fans wanted from Jimmy Garoppolo coming into this preseason. I think that Kyle Shanahan said it best. You know, it's kind of a little ridiculous to get upset over 6 plays. A couple that were unlucky, I think those tip balls of the line of scrimmage in Denver were a little unlucky. A couple that were very clearly some rust getting knocked off. He had a great game, I think, in Kansas City. For where he is coming back in his recovery, you know, you're going to be a little skittish with the knee. He's feeling game pressure and game speed for the first time in a full calendar year. And he's going to take some time to get back into it. But there were a couple throws that were absolutely incredible in this game. The throw to Richie James along the sideline was awesome. And of course, the touchdown to Matt Breida was great. So I think absolutely that performance should inspire confidence. And you know, you shouldn't get too low when you have, you know, 7 games, not a huge sample size, but 7 games that show you in a 49ers uniform that he can play well, 6 preseason snaps should not deter you.
Oscar, did you get any sense prior to last night's performance that there was some panic in the Niners camp that might mirror the panic that was going on in their fan base?
No, I didn't get that panic from you know, things that were coming out of the team and kind of the beat reporters at all. I think it was really fan-driven, and I think fans they know that the success at the quarterback position really determines a lot of your success in the NFL. And Jimmy Garoppolo, for lots of people, is still an unproven commodity. You know, there are 7 games of 49er film out there, but that's still only 7 games. I think at this point, Baker Mayfield has more snaps than Jimmy Garoppolo, despite the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo has played quite a bit more, he's been in the league for quite a bit longer. And so I think that's what people want. It's that uncertain team. So any piece of evidence, one way or the other, is going to sway them. But I don't think that the team feels that way. I think the team knows what they have in Jimmy Garoppolo. Otherwise, they feel they know what they have in Jimmy Garoppolo. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given that contract. And so I didn't get that sense from the team at all, no.
I haven't asked you since this came down a few months ago about the reports of maybe some friction between Kyle and John, and Kyle was doing more scouting than he wanted, and you know, he was the guy looking at Wisnowski and some of these other people. But you know, even if there is some friction, I mean, these are two adults, and they have a very high profile job with a lot of stress on them, and you can't have everybody agreeing on everything anyway. But what do you think about those reports?
So it's interesting now looking back on those reports, and it sounds like those reports may have been from one disgruntled employee in the front office that, you know, kind of sourced the story, and that employee is apparently or has been dismissed, at least that's what Shanahan said, about a month ago. And I think that I would trust someone like Matt Maiocco, who's plugged into the team and knows those personalities really well. And he actually had a Matt Miller, who is the Bleacher Report guy, who kind of broke the tension story on his podcast. And then I also asked him straight up. He's like, "Hey, I don't see it. So, you know, I'm not, you know, throwing you under the bus or anything, but tell me what you're hearing, tell me what you're reporting." Cause Matt Maiocco, who I trust when it comes to this kind of stuff, he says, "I just don't see it. I don't think it's that big of a deal, to be honest with you. I think there's probably some, I would hope there's some degree of tension. I would hope that they feel strongly about things such that they can challenge each other and that they can make each other better. But I think as relationships go in San Francisco between a head coach and a general manager, this one's still positive. They carpool to work every now and again, Lynch and Shanahan. And I don't think you would ever see Trent Baalke and Jim Harbaugh carpool. So I think it's probably not something that you've got to worry about too much at this point. I think winning fixes everything. And if this team ends up pushing for a playoff spot at the end of the year, things are going to be great. I think if the team ends up with, you know, 4 to 6 wins, you're going to probably start hearing rumblings, but that's not necessarily because they're impossible people to get along with each other. It's just because losing sucks in the NFL, and ultimately it costs people jobs.
Yeah, and they're 10-22 thus far in years 1 and 2. They got a 6-year contract, and I know that's no guarantee that they'll be around for those 6 years, but I am a little bit amused by people that think Shanahan is on the hot seat this year. I figure after what happened to Garoppolo, and just as important, Jet McKinnon never got on the field, and clearly somebody that Shanahan was counting on and thinks works in his system very well. I give him something of a pass for last year.
Yeah, I agree. I think the context in which you get your record matters. And when your quarterback goes down, he's such a big part of your team that it's expected that you're not going to win as many games. And so I do think the context matters. That's not to say that tenure has been entirely rosy. I think they make some decisions that, you know, leave you scratching your head a little bit sometimes. You know, you can kind of explain them, but still overall, when you get into that place where you're trying to compete for a Lombardi trophy, you really win on the margins. You win on the edges because the NFL is very, very competitive. And you worry sometimes about, you know, paying 3X salary for a fullback and what that does to the rest of your roster, or, you know, franchising a kicker and, you know, giving them a whole bunch of money. I think there's some decisions that make you worry and wonder, but right now I think let's just get to a place where they're even in the conversation at the end of the year, and then hopefully those things begin to self-correct.
When you do advanced stats and film and you look at these guys, and, you know, you look at a guy like Nick Bosa, which was a no-brainer pick. He would have been number one overall had the, you know, Kyler Murray revolution hadn't happened. So they said that was the pick they had to make. But we know he did his ACL in high school, and we know about the injury with the Buckeyes last year, missed almost the whole season and doing a hammy, and then he got kind of a bad luck injury with a guy rolling over on him. Do you see anything outside of this guy's a machine, he's going to be like Joey, he might be better than Joey, or do you have some concerns about his fragility?
I don't have any concerns about his fragility right now. I do agree that to a certain degree, injury and health and availability can be a skill. I do think that some players take care of their bodies a little bit better than others, and some players just have really, really bad luck. I think Jimmy Ward is a great example of a player that, you know, you would love to say that he is, you can count on him to be on the field, but, you know, he's ended, I think, the season four of the seasons have ended on injured reserve. You know, I think when it comes to Bosa, though, I don't see anything thus far that makes me think that he's unnecessarily fragile. What I see when you roll that tape is someone who is incredibly technically accurate, who's technical to the point where he is going to be a very, very good, I think, defensive player for the team. And while I don't know that he will suit up for week 1, because that high ankle sprain, I think, is kind of dicey to come back from, I don't think that these kinds of injuries are ones where you think to yourself, like, oh, man, like there's some kind of soft tissue pattern here. I think he's still, you know, a young person in his NFL career. and you hope that you hope health and you hope for the best. But at this point, I think it just seems like fluky stuff. And I wouldn't say that he's necessarily injury prone, but you know, you never know. There's still time.
Oscar, the Niners spent a lot of time and attention on their defense in the offseason, but because of what Garoppolo has done and the amount of attention that quarterbacks are always going to get in the NFL, we haven't really broken down whether those moves they made on defense have helped out. I know some of the guys, number of guys, hasn't really been on the field yet. Tell me, what are you thinking about this defense? Does it have a chance to be significantly improved?
So that's a great question, and I think really it is the defense that's going to determine how far this team goes, because they had some really abysmal coverage defenders last year, and they really need that unit to improve. I think thus far, probably the best development for them thus far has been moving Tarvarius more to free safety and having him play a more natural role, a role that he played in college, that he played in college very well, is something that will really help unlock the 49ers. Because if you can solidify him at safety, that's one of the most important roles in that cover three Seattle scheme. I mean, we all saw what happened to the Seattle Seahawks defense when Earl Thomas went down. Irrespective of having decent corners, that free safety goes away, your eraser is gone. All of a sudden, that defense looks quite a bit more pedestrian. So I think that that's a really, really positive development. I also think moving DJ Reed to corner and not having him try to play safety has also been very positive. So I think those moves, even though they're not acquiring players, have seemed to kind of put the 49ers defense a little back on track, give them a bit more depth, and hopefully solidify some spots. I think Akello Witherspoon is going to be a really important piece, because if he can solidify the other side and get back to the player that he was in limited play as a rookie, now all of a sudden you have some corners that are really going to be helped by an improved pass rush. And that's where I think if that defense can get, they don't even have to get to top 10 defense. If they can get from bottom third to maybe even the worst coverage unit in the league to just about league average, that offense can be explosive enough to really start to win the winnable games that you need to in order to be relevant at the end of the year.
Tittle and Herbs here, 95.7 The Game. A couple more questions for Oscar Aparicio with Better Rivals, 49ers podcast. When you look at the second worst team in football, as the Niners were, and not only were they the second worst team, they lost to the worst team twice. So you see them spending a fourth round pick on a punter, you're like, what in the hell are you doing? Well, this guy's a pretty special guy. He's an Aussie guy out of Utah, and he's showed his toughness against Denver, laying a guy out. But here's the thing, as dumb as that pick might be, field position is huge. Even in 2019, special teams gets pushed aside sometimes, even though we know it's a third of the game. So you, as an advanced stat guy, you probably like that pick more than others. Am I right?
You would be wrong, my friend. I don't think that pick was the smartest way to use your draft resources.
All right, well, then we agree.
I do think that the punter is probably one of the more important special teams positions. There is value in field position. There is value in flipping field position. But the problem with drafting a fourth-round punter is that there is no guarantee that drafting a punter that high is actually going to net you a great punter. If you look at the great punters in the NFL now, some of them were drafted, a lot of them were not, and you just don't need to. I think getting another corner with the coverage unit they had probably would have been a better use of capital than getting a punter. Wisnowski may not even be the best punter from that class. Jake Bailey, of course, which was drafted by the Patriots just around later, may end up, you know, being a better prospect. He was a better prospect kind of coming into the draft. I think you understand why the team likes Wisnowski. You understand why they spent the capital on him. And yes, it will be fun to see a punter lay someone out on special teams. But, you know, when he tries to do that and ends up breaking a collarbone because, you know, you get a punch on coverage unit, then we'll see how far that gets them. But I think if you look at that pick from a true analytic standpoint, they overpaid for a position where in order for that pick to return the investment that they put in, he's basically got to be one of the best punters, not just this year, but probably over the last few years. And I think they probably had some Michael Dixon eyes, and I understand that. He's been great for Seattle, but he was a much better punter in college than Wisnowski was. And there's no guarantee that Michael Dixon was going to end up becoming Michael Dixon, just like there's no guarantee that Wisnowski is going to be fantastic, phenomenal, or great. I hope the best for him, because as a fan, obviously, as soon as they're in the Niner uniform, I want them to be successful. But that was absolutely not a smart application of resources, considering where their roster still is, because they have some spots they need to improve.
Oscar, we know that Shanahan can scheme, has a great scheme. He can move the ball. He's a great coordinator. What do we know about him as a head coach? It feels like not a whole lot.
Yeah, you know, so that's a really good question. And I think that what we know about him as a head coach is a couple of things. I think we know that he is aggressive and can be aggressive. I think that his decision-making at spots can sometimes be conservative. You would like to see a bit more aggression on fourth down. And I think hopefully that changes when he feels he's got a quarterback that will, you know, make those aggressive moves pay off. I think there is something to be said about the decisions he makes to kick field goals when he gets down in the red zone. Doesn't always make the most efficient decisions or most optimal decisions when it comes to scoring points. But I think as a head coach, you really are the leader of a team. The team embodies your personality. It did so with Jim Harbaugh. It did so with Mike Singletary. And, you know, for better or worse, it did so with Jim Tomsula as well. And I think that what he and John Lynch have been able to do is create a very positive culture that has been able to withstand the kind of losing streaks that they've seen thus far. And I don't think that you can just throw that away, you know, as something that a head coach can do and do well. Because if a head coach starts to grade on you and you lose the locker room, even when it gets to, you know, when if you start to lose and things get tough, I think that can torpedo any offensive genius that you have. So I do think that he can identify talent in his assistant coaches. And that's also something that's been important. I think Bobby Turner, of course, is amazing. I think some of the players or some of the coaches he's brought on to help have really helped propel the 49ers to do some great things. But I think that ultimately it does come down to wins and losses, and all of those things are going to sound a lot better if the Niners end up around 10 wins at the end of the year.
All right, well, that's my last question. Real quick, for fun, I'm going 7-9. What do you think?
Ooh, all right. This is going to be the first time that I'm going to be on the record, I think, with the season projection officially. We're going to do our season projection episode this week, actually. We're going to record on Wednesday, and that's when we're going to do our season preview. I think that they get, especially, maybe I'm riding high off the Kansas City performance, but I think they get to 9-7. I think they get to 9-7, and they may sneak into that wild card spot at 9 wins. But I do think if things break right for them, they're going to be around that 9-win area. If that defense can't take a step forward or they get another significant injury, they could end up easily around 7-8 wins. So I think that's the range you're looking at.
So, Rick, you picked 7, Oscar picked 9, and I've got 8. I think we got it covered.
All right, we got it covered.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
All right, there he is, Oscar Aparicio. Follow him on Twitter at Better Rivals. And, of course, you can hear him on the Better Rivals 49ers podcast. He definitely knows what he's talking about. Oscar, great stuff, man. Thanks for your insights, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You know what, Herbs, just real quick before we do, we're going to get a little good for ball, bad for ball going here. But real quick, Jason LaConfora, who's been covering the NFL for a long time, he's a CBS guy. He has a list of 8 teams that can win the Super Bowl and 8 teams that can't. The teams that can, he has Patriots, Saints, Eagles, Chiefs, Chargers, Seahawks, Steelers, Panthers.
Okay, the list means nothing. I don't even need to hear any more about this. If the Rams are not on that list, you got to be kidding me.
Well, and the Panthers are? These are the teams he said have absolutely no shot of winning the Super Bowl. Dolphins, Cardinals, Bengals, Redskins, Texans, Giants, Raiders, Titans. So the reason I bring this up is that the Niners are not on that list. The second worst team in football, he's got 8 other teams on that list.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought your thoughts about that. They're not in the top 8 or the bottom 8?
Sounds about right. I mean, we're talking about mediocrity, right? Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the middle, and that's where you're getting at. Any teams on the bottom 8 that surprised you?
On the bottom 8, yeah. I mean, when you think about...
Oh, the Jets aren't on the might win the Super Bowl. That's another thing that invalidates this list. Well, the Jets are running away with this.
It also invalidates the list that the Jets aren't on the list of teams that have no shot.
Why are you being hurtful today?
I'm not being hurtful. I'm just being honest.
Well, and sometimes that's hurtful.
Why are you a Jets fan from the peninsula?
Do you want the short version or the long version?
Let's go short.
Okay, short version. When you're a little kid, you're a front runner. You like the teams that you see all the time and win. Don't shake your head. No, this is my story, Rick.
Just say when you were a kid.
I'm the youngest of three brothers. I saw the Cowboys and the Steelers. It seemed like every year we're in the Super Bowl, so I decided I'm going to like the Cowboys. And my brothers decided to start ripping me for being a front runner forever. And finally, I got sick of it. It was like mid-December, I looked in my trusty Chronicle Sporting Green, looked at the NFL standings, looked for the worst team in football, and at the time it was the Jets, they were 2-12, and I said, Dad, for Christmas, I want a Richard Todd jersey and a Wesley Walker poster. And I got it, and I did it all so my brothers would stop calling me a front runner because I had adopted the worst team in football. Guess what happened the next year, Rick? The Jets made the playoffs, and I was labeled a front runner again by my brothers.
Well, just remind them they've never won the AFC in their history.
Why would I remind them of that?
Because it shows you're not a front runner.
Look, we got Le'Veon Bell. We've got...
You got that dummy Darnold.
I know. That's I tell everybody that I work with, somehow during the course of every show I do with someone else, I will tell the story of Rick Tittle dismissing my team's chance at success because their rookie quarterback, in air quotes here, looks stupid.
And he's a turnover machine. All right. Well, just as that was, there are many ways you can look on life.
It's time for Good for Ball.
Oh, that was outstanding.
Or Bad for Ball.
That is a disgusting act.
Here's Michael Urban.
All right. We do mean everything. It's not just sports related. It's certainly not just baseball related. Everything in life can be labeled good for ball or bad for ball. If you hang out with me over the course of the day, you're going to hear me say to other people, to myself, rhetorically, that's good for ball or that's bad for ball. Like, let's say you're putting sugar. You decide you want to put some sugar in your coffee. I'm not a huge sugar in my coffee guy, but every once in a while, I'll feel like I need a boost of energy, and so I will do that. I was at my trusty AM, PM. I grab the sugar thing, turn it over to put just a little bit of sugar in my coffee, and apparently, one of the people, it's right next to a high school, and you can only have three students in the store at the same time. I'm guessing it was one of those punk kids that ever so slightly unscrewed the cap to the sugar container. And so when I turned it over to put just a little sugar in my coffee, the top of the container and all of the sugar poured into my coffee, splashed onto me, and all I could say was just, that's so bad for ball. I just stood there, just a mess. I'm being stained. I'm in pain. I've got hurt. That's bad for ball. Can you give me a good for ball from your day?
I was going to give you a bad for ball, too.
Why?
Because that's what I was ready with.
All right, give me one.
You always go good, and then you throw bad
at me.
Give me one.
Give me a bad for ball.
Every car in the Bay Area gets its window smashed every day.
What?
Seems like it.
Why do you say that? You've lost me completely with this.
This is the highest amount of anywhere in the world. You can even go to third world countries, former Soviet states. No one gets their window smashed more than people in the Bay Area.
Why is that? Is there any theories?
It's an epidemic.
And that's bad for... What's bad for ball is that we don't know why. We need to study
it. Well, thievery. But a lot of times, there's nothing worth stealing. Just smash it and go in there and steal some matches. I don't know.
If anybody was able to get into your car right now without breaking anything, would there be anything that you would miss if they took something in your car?
Probably my Phantom of the Opera CD.
Ooh.
No, I don't know.
Yeah?
All right, what do you got, buddy?
My lime green banana hammock. That's a thong. I would miss that.
You don't have to explain it.
Well, I wasn't explaining it for you. Well, you're a worldly guy. I know you know what a banana hammock
people
is.
People have seen Borat.
Okay. Have you seen the Miami Hurricanes turnover chain?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know they have a new one this year?
I didn't know they changed it.
Yeah, I didn't know either. I couldn't tell you what the previous one was, but
it was that, you know, that stork with the M.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Now it's just the 305, which I'm assuming is the area code for Miami.
Yeah.
Okay. They were rocking the chain yesterday, but they lost the game. Good for ball, bad for ball. These turnover changes, more teams are adopting them.
I think it's fun. It actually, if you want to go back to the old days in the military, if you were a higher rank for the day, it's usually if you're on guard duty, you'd have this chain around your neck with a steel plate, which kind of said, I was a corporal, but right now I'm a sergeant.
Really?
Yeah. I think the turnover chain is fun.
Me too.
Anything like that. But you got to be careful with area codes because you know the whole Bay Area was 415.
Uh-huh.
And even Sir Mix-a-Lot, Oakland Skizo, how do I know? Because 415 was the area code. So if you want to get 510 tattooed on your back or something, it might change. I remember when my cousin who lived out in San Ramon, because he was 510, and then they changed to the 925, and my aunt said, just take 415 and add it to 510, and you get 925. I'm like, oh, that's pretty genius.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is an interesting way of looking at it. Now, let's make sure we get through these. I was going to ask you a silly question. A woman was brushing her teeth.
Oh, this isn't silly.
Not at all. Do you know more details about this? Because, God bless him, Ryan gave me a very truncated version of good for ball, bad for ball. I don't know what we're talking about. In some of these cases, not saying you did a bad job, Ryan. You did a great job, but there's room for improvement. It just says, woman was brushing her teeth on the highway. Is that good for ball or bad for ball? There's got to be more detail and something freaky in there somewhere, but I'm just going to take the question for what it was. Brushing your teeth on the highway behind the wheel, is that good for ball or bad for ball?
I'm going to say it's bad for ball because you have nowhere to spit except out the window and you got one hand on the wheel. I don't know the details, but this is good radio.
But what about that empty Gatorade bottle that you keep empty in your car in case you get stuck in traffic and really have to relieve your bladder? You could always just spit into that.
You know those guys that always have a dip and they have their spitter?
Yeah.
It's always a Gatorade bottle.
So gross.
You notice that?
So gross.
One time, where I was in
college. Did you ever chew?
Never. When I was in college, I threw, a guy goes, where's my spitter? I'm like, what? I cleaned up. You threw away my spitter.
Was it a Gatorade bottle for him,
too? It
was
like a 9-year-old Gatorade bottle, yeah.
So here's another story about me being the youngest of three brothers, and here's where it worked out for me.
Spoiled rotten.
The oldest one had just started playing, I think, Joe DiMaggio baseball or something. He was 16, 17. And so he was introduced to tobacco. And I see him chewing tobacco. And I ask him about it. And I say, can I try it? And he says, sure. So he gives me a little bit of leaf, right? Red man. And I say, so what do I do? And he says, well, you put it in your cheek and you chew it. And when you get a mouthful of spit, you swallow it. Like, okay. Yeah. He didn't tell me about spitting the spit away. He told me swallow the spit. So I swallowed the spit. I threw my guts up. I have never come within 5 feet of chew like that again. But how about this? The next year, my next oldest brother, the middle brother of the three of us, I see him dipping, right, with the Skoal packets. And I go, is that the same thing as what Dan's doing? He says, no, this is totally different. I go, can I try it? Am I going to get sick from it? He goes, well, no, if you just do what I tell you to do. Okay, what do I do? He says, well, you stick it between your cheek and gums, and when, you know, the fluid gets going, you just swallow the fluid and get it going again. Yeah. And I fell for it again.
Gullible.
And I threw up again. The good news is I ended up playing baseball for a good long time after that, but never felt the need to stick tobacco in my mouth.
Only one time when I was playing in high school, we had Red Man leaf.
That was what I got sick on. Yep.
Yeah, and I accidentally swallowed it, and I almost hurled. But both of my brothers, both Lee Harvey and Adolph, never led me down that road.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Lee Harvey and Oswald.
No.
Okay.
All right.
Next, the Jersey Shore girls picketed the White House. You familiar with the Jersey Shore?
Never seen it.
But
I know who they are. Yeah.
Do you know who the situation is?
Is that the guy with the six pack?
I don't know. He's Mike the Situation something.
Never seen it.
I didn't know he was in prison. It doesn't surprise me, certainly. But apparently his female cohort on the Jersey Shore, they picketed the White House to get him out of prison. Isn't that sweet? Maybe. Is it good for ball or bad for ball?
If he's guilty, it's bad for ball. If he's innocently incarcerated, then it's good for ball.
I say if you're truly supporting your friend, it's good for ball. If it's just a lame way to get some attention because the Jersey Shore is so 2004, that would be bad for ball.
All right.
How about this? Brian Flores. You know who Brian Flores is?
Yeah, he's head coach of the Dolphins.
Okay. Do you know who Kenny Stills is, right?
Wide receiver.
One of the better players on the Dolphins. Brian Flores played 8 straight Jay-Z songs at practice to mentally challenge Kenny Stills. and Stills protested by taking a knee. I have no idea what that means, any of it. So I'm going to say good for Ball, because if nothing else, it's silly, and I've got plenty of room for silly in my life.
Let's go for good for Ball, too. By the way, can I throw something at you real quick?
Yes.
It's been a big hubbub, especially in the African-American community, about Sean Carter, as you know, as Jay-Z.
Getting in bed with the NFL.
Yeah, and some people say that he's selling out, and this is a way to ignore the Kaepernick situation and to appease some of the black fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just see it as a good businessman making a good business move. It does seem weird to pay a guy an exorbitant amount of money to pick halftime talent for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and he runs a talent agency, so do you think he's ever going to select somebody that's not in his stable?
Right, and in Jay-Z's defense, the NFL comes to him with a big check.
Right.
What is he going to say, no? So, I don't know.
He's not a businessman. He's a businessman.
I like that.
It's his quote.
You have any more?
From Jay-Z?
No, from Ryan.
No, I do not. But I, what do you think? You think Jay-Z's just taking the money? Or, wouldn't it? I understand what you're saying. But how about take that big check, cash it, and tell us what you're going to do to help the African-American community. That way you could get them, the people that are coming down your road, you could get them off that road.
Yeah, but the other thing is, too, is why, if I'm Jay-Z, why do I have to be a champion for my community? Why can't I just make money too? That's a burden upon him. Don't you think that's a burden? It's like, well, now you have to do something extra. If they hired a white guy, they wouldn't want him to champion something. You know what I mean? Why can't he just take a check?
They should have hired Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning can do anything.
All right, you know who else who can do anything?
He's a 6'4" fetus. Peyton Manning is.
What the hell?
Doesn't he look like a fetus? Seriously.
6'4" fetus was my nickname in high school.
That'd be a good band name, right?
All right, speaking of 6'4" fetuses, the next show coming up, Stephen Langford, nice guy Stephen, you know him well. If you are up at very early hours, he does the 5 to 6 pregame show here.
Multi-talented
Monday
Stephen
through
Langford.
Friday with Anna Kagarakis at times. And then we also have Tommy Call, who has transitioned also from producer to being our draft expert and now host as well. And they're going to be coming up. And let's start with you, Stephen. You got couple of these, one under the belt, two under the belt now.
One under the belt.
All right. In fact, we don't even have his mic on yet. How many?
One under the belt.
Okay,
so
one.
Far.
That was last week that I introduced
but
you.
But he's also been doing the pregame show for quite a while.
He has. He has been doing that for all the owls and the meth heads that are up at that hour.
And the 6'4" fetus.
How did it go, in your opinion?
I thought it went real well. Just going 3 hours, though, is a little. Yeah.
You thought that was good?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You listened?
No.
I thought it was horrible.
I'm going to be listening to at least the first hour and a half today while I drive home.
Though. Going from 3 to 6 for 3 hours straight was a little different. Mm-hmm. Forgot to take a sip of water in between the 5 to 6 hours, so I was starting to lose the voice a little bit. But other than that,
welcome
I think it went
world.
Pretty well.
Okay, we also have Tommy Call. And how did you think it went?
I thought it went pretty well. It was really exciting. Obviously, it was a lot of nerves and emotion, but like positive. But
Michael Nervin.
Yeah, but now we're veterans, you know, so today is just going to run smooth, as easy as it can be.
And Tommy's had reps as a guest, you know, like it's not like they're radio virgins when they did this last week. Ooh. I mean, they've both had plenty of reps,
so
they're both obviously talented.
Stephen, now that you've done it, what do you think about when people do a four-hour solo shift? What do you think of that?
I have all the more respect for you, but I just can't get over the 6'4" fetuses thing. Like, what did we walk into?
You're welcome. By the way,
we're already off the tracks here.
I would like, just as there should be some sort of, I don't know, initiation for the new on-air people. And since you've just laid out very clearly that the four-hour solo show is the most difficult thing we do, let's get them. We're going to let them do the show together, but it's going to have to be 4 hours, and it's going to be from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. on a Saturday. Good luck to you. You'll get like 2 calls and 3 texts.
You sure?
Be ready to talk.
You know, but deep
be
down,
double from last week.
Deep down, there's. Deep down, they're thinking, that's what you get, Herbs.
Yeah, they're thinking, yeah, you're just an old man, dude.
No one wants to hear your fetus face.
What kind of music do you think the band, the 6'4" fetuses, would play? Are we talking like heavy metal?
I think it's probably like whale sounds. Isn't that what fetuses hear?
I'm going ska.
I'm thinking about electropop.
That was a sperm whale, by the way.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a blue whale.
Oh, I could tell the whole time.
Could you?
Yeah.
Tommy, what do you guys have on your show today?
A little Andrew Luck, of course. Mm-hmm. Listen to you guys talk about that. Mm-hmm. Obviously going to get into some Jimmy Garoppolo.
What do you guys think of the Andrew Luck thing? How about the Indianapolis Colts fans just lost me for life? Not that they ever really had me, but come on, booing the guy because he's retiring? Yeah. You see the hell he's gone through for you?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to save this for the show, but I'll just give my take right on it.
Well, it's going to listen to the show.
As far as
this is when we need to make our mark, Stephen. Seriously. Go.
That's why I have you on, so that you'll get some ears.
But as far as fans go, I think just with the Colts fans in the position that they were in, seeing that their team, they were losing for a few years, only to get that, you know, the number two overall pick, and then he comes in and he's expected to be the savior, has some injury history and injury issues, and then retires because of it. I think that just judging that fan base, if you're just a fan of a different team, I think it's hard to just judge them overall because of the position that they were in.
I also think it wasn't every fan, too.
Yeah. Right.
I think being in that position, you're obviously a diehard. You're sitting in the third quarter of the third preseason game at this arena. You get that update on your phone. Everybody has the phones out. You know, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
Right?
They would have found out after the game or something like that. So I think it's just also kind of the perfect storm of the media age we're in on top of that, too. And it's just, I couldn't imagine sitting there and watching that all go down and literally see Andrew Luck and a herd of people walk off the field.
Right.
I mean, I'll probably remember that forever, I feel like.
Steven, guests?
Oh, we have no guests today. We are going guest-free for the 3 hours.
That adds another element of difficulty to it.
Well, do you know what the thing is, too? When you're rolling solo, obviously, it's good to have a guest. But I can tell you, as someone who listens to sports talk radio, there are a lot of times when two hosts have a great discussion going, and they'll say, coming up next, it's the voice of the San Antonio Spurs. And I'm like, I'm out. I don't want to hear that guy.
Right.
So if you guys got something good going, hey, who cares?
I think going into the next 3 hours, we got a lot cooking. Got a lot cooking.
You know what I like? Is it now that, I mean, I've been in this business for a long time. I knew Tommy from when he first showed up. I've known Steven for quite some time. And just the only thing I can equate it to is, you know, everybody knows that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And in the meetings, you'll see a face, you know, on a Tuesday for the first time ever. And the light in their eyes is like gone. And over the next 3 months, if they keep coming back to the meetings, you see the light come back on. A little bit different for you guys, but I can see your confidence building. I can see that you know you can do this and that you belong here. It's like seeing the light come on in you guys, your career. It's pretty cool to watch, man. I'm happy for you guys.
Appreciate that, man. Herbs.
Thank you.
That's funny because during the break he said, oh, no, two more straight white males. Let's burn this place
down. Punks are going to take my run. I'm calling in like five times.
Oh, I can't wait. You need it,
and I'm going to change my voice and change my name.
You don't have
every time.
You know, he used to call me all the time when he worked here was our friend Henry Wofford. He'd be in the car. He'd like leave and I would take over. Selectric Tittle, I heard what you said. And it was great. I always liked hearing from him.
I always felt, and I'm not coming after him in particular, but I always felt like that was a little bit sad. Like, dude, do you miss the attention that much?
I remember before you worked here officially, I used to interview you about baseball stuff. Remember that?
Yeah, and you're smarter for it. What's the point?
I remember you told me.
You need that confidence.
You said, you know what? When you get a hit, run to third, not first.
It's different. It's free. Hey, did you know this is apropos of absolutely nothing, in freestyle, you guys know my daughter's a swimmer, right? I recently found out that if it's the, let's say it's the 200 freestyle, you know, they could jump in and do the backstroke or do butterfly or whatever. They can do that and it won't be illegal. It's literally freestyle.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could do anything you want.
Yeah. And so I was at a meet. It was a early playoffs high school meet, and this one girl was way better than everybody, right? And she was a stud at backstroke, probably going to go to the Olympic trials in backstroke. She was in the longest, they entered her in the longest freestyle thing, and she dove in like everybody else, but then flipped over on her back and did the whole race backstroke and beat everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
By the way, on the
swimming knowledge.
This is the other thing, too, is that you will be talking to people who have zero sense of humor or do not understand the word sarcasm. Yeah. Mm. On the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795, this guy from the 510 says, owls or meth heads? That's pretty ignorant. What about folks who go to the gym before their 6 a.m. start at the fire department, a-hole? Wow. Except he spelled
had to
ass.
Had to throw the gym flex in there, too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He just said he's going to work.
That's
you know?
What's great about Tommy and Steven. They'll pick up those little things.
Come on.
This is the kind of thing like he's in his car and he's like, I haven't been offended yet today. I have no reason to live. Where is my outrage? There. That's my outrage. Now I can exist. Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So you got those people, too.
6 foot like four this, fetus.
Like this absolute idiot who would take the time before he's going. So there's one fireman who sucks.
Well, at 5:45, to be fair, instead of taking all callers, we take owl callers only at 5:45.
I like that.
Taking owl callers.
I heard
Todd!
I heard that you banned possums, though.
We did possums and just pretty much any rodent.
How about renegade or warrior? The warrior.
Haven't had the pleasure of renegade calling.
That's the initiation, I think.
You
got
to
really
ask
need.
For yeah. that on the air today. Yeah, yeah. I need you to get renegade in, and if you don't get him in, text me. I will call in as renegade.
Ooh. I appreciate your time.
Warrior, appreciate your time. Excuse me, renegade, appreciate you.
I appreciate his time.
Give us a little. Well, you know what? I'll let these guys get a moment to breathe. You guys, you got 3 hours or 4 hours?
3 hours.
3 hours.
3 hours coming up.
Four to seven. Soft 3 hours.
Well, thanks for coming in. We'll see
Andrew Lux.
See you guys in a second.
Congratulations, all right. Fellas.
All right. That is Stephen Langford and Tommy Call. They'll be coming in next. No, different 510 just said goodbye, Tittle, with 3 exclamation points. Maybe it's Trump because he always signs. Every one of his tweets, every sentence always ends with an exclamation
and
point.
And it's always the last thing he writes is always a sentence fragment.
By the way, Herbs, the 559, which is Mars, says, freestyle, you can swim anything as long as it's an actual event. 200 free can't swim 2 laps back to free because that's not an event. Your thoughts?
What are you going to do with that time you just wasted that you'll never get back? Thanks.
When are you on?
Rick, what are you going to do with the rest of your Sunday? I never ask you this.
Well, this is what I usually do. I have this den of depravity where I have these insects that are prisoners and I pull wings off helpless flies. Then I take a hairbrush, I pretend it's a mic, and I do a show for the rats in the attic. I'll do another 3-hour show. And then I'll cry myself in to sleep in the fetal position. And I'll do all that next right here on 95.7 The Game.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.